One final week in the 2015 movie calendar, and there's still a number of new prestige films opening in theaters, and some of them are not named Star Wars. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. There's plenty of movie ticket buying to go around at the holidays, and Hollywood is hoping you'll be taking some time off to watch more than one movie. Today we share some thoughts on two new films, one an uplifting real-life rags-to-riches tale, the other a snowbound Western epic. Joining me to discuss Joy and The Hateful Eight is frequent contributor Kyle Alvarado. Good morning.
Morning, Chuck. Thanks for having me back.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
A day late. Formerly of the El Paso Times, I know you've just left to take a position in university communications here at UTEP. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So the movie release calendar is overflowing, as are the Star Wars coffers, I gather. Mm-hmm. But lots of anticipated films still coming out. Everything's been scrunched to the end for awards season, starting with David O. Russell's film Joy that opened here yesterday.
Mm-hmm. This is the third collaboration with Jennifer Lawrence, and it's the Rags to Riches story of Joy Mangano, who is the inventor of the Miracle Mop. I would argue that it's not like a true biopic because
right.
They do take some creative liberties, but it's okay. It's his quietest film, I think. It's sort of missing that manic energy that he had in American Hustle and Silver Linings Playbook and The Fighter. But I think he gets another fantastic performance out of Jennifer Lawrence, and he has a strong supporting cast in Elizabeth Rom and Edgar Ramirez and Robert De Niro and Isabella Rossellini, who I think out of all of them, she's having the most fun in the movie.
Thank God for Isabella Rossellini. I haven't seen her on the big screen in a while, and it was a treat to see her credit come up and then have such a prominent role in the film.
Yeah, watching her sort of tear into Lawrence's character every now and again after her failures is – and just to cut into that really quickly, I think part of the film – I call it the Selena effect, where it spends too much time sort of making your main character a saint. You don't have a complex character. You don't have – a lot of these issues that sort of make them detailed and layered. It sets up a problem. Joy gets knocked back. Joy succeeds, and Joy moves on.
It did feel pretty formulaic, which was odd for David O. Russell, who really, as you said, has cut his teeth on and has a real knack for telling stories of people triumphing in difficult circumstances, oftentimes with complex family backgrounds, which Joy has. She has this amazing extended family with amazing actors playing them, including Robert De Niro as her father. And she's juggling a lot in the film, but it just seemed like there wasn't much air in it. It just A to B to C, a good film, competent film, well told. That manic energy you're talking about, though, from American Hustle, there's a little hint of it if people watch this film in the first 20 minutes, I think, as they're kind of getting us into these characters and introducing them quickly, that just kind of leaves the film after that, though.
Yeah. Well, he, I think, suffers from over-stylizing it in the first act, and then he just sort of drops that for convention for the rest of the movie. And that's kind of a big surprise from someone like him who sort of takes stylizing things and he just sort of runs it all the way to the end.
So your issue is that it becomes quite a conventional film after that.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, not that there's anything wrong with convention. I think when you tell a biopic, I think the need to have a conventional type of film overpowers the need to have an artistic statement. And I think that's where he sort of dropped the ball here.
And the story of Joy and her invention of the Miracle Mop, the true life story, kind of parallels with at some point we are introduced to Bradley Cooper's character who's basically created the home shopping network. Mm-hmm. And we get a little peek into that world. And so it takes us back a ways, a few decades. It's the 80s. But this is another film that is largely carried by a woman. It's about a woman. The female lead is the central character that we're following through the whole film. This has been a pretty refreshing year. So I actually liked the film for that aspect, how it fit in with so many other fine films like 45 Years, Carol, Brooklyn, even Room, even some of the big action films. Like I know you're a big fan of Mad Max and Charlize Theron being front and center in that film.
Yeah, and even Star Wars.
Star Wars. There you go.
Just got to get it in there, Daisy Ridley.
So recommend this film?
If someone buys your ticket.
Oh, tough. I'm not quite that harsh on it. I think given what's out right now, it is worth seeing in the big screen. Wonderful performances all around. As you say, there is something lacking, I felt, in it, but otherwise a pleasant experience.
Yeah. It has a killer soundtrack, and it's such a small scene. They have that little duet of Something Stupid between Jennifer Lawrence and Edgar Ramirez, and, you know, that's nice. I think it's probably my favorite little section of the film, and it was only like 10 seconds.
Even Jennifer Lawrence in a mediocre film is worth seeing.
Yeah.
So Joy may be a bit flat, but still an enjoyable film. Our next film, though, I found completely joyless, I have to say, and quite a disappointment. We usually discuss films just released in theater. Today we get to include a sneak peek at a new release for next week. It opens on New Year's Day, Quentin Tarantino's eighth film, The Hateful Eight. This is something I was actually really looking forward to. You and I were both invited to a Weinstein Company early screening of this a few weeks ago, private screening. We weren't allowed to talk about it till now, so here we are. If you've seen the trailers, you know this is really Quentin Tarantino's epic Western, the Roadshow version, which is opening on Christmas or yesterday in select theaters, is 187 minutes long. Just unbelievably long. And it has an intermission and some overture music. I gather the version we're going to be getting later this week will be about 10 or 15 minutes shorter than that because they're pulling out the intermission, but still a very long film. Jennifer Jason Leigh is a wanted criminal that's being literally dragged at times back to a hanging by Kurt Russell's ruthless bounty hunter. Along the way, they warily pick up some strangers and acquaintances on a coach ride through a blizzard. Beautiful scenery, a lot of hype about it being shot in 70 millimeter up in the mountains in real forests and real deep snow. But surprising that about 30 minutes in, we end up in a one-room frontier cabin / frontier store. And really the rest of the film takes place over 2 hours in this one room set with an amazing rogues gallery, if you will, of cast of characters all gathered during this blizzard. Things are not as they seem. Kurt Russell becomes suspicious that some of the folks there might have plans on breaking Jennifer Jason Leigh's character out, and he wants the bounty. And it sort of devolves into a parlor mystery at that point. It's an interesting move on Tarantino's part. This is a film that has more words in it than probably the next three films combined that are out in theaters right now. Yeah. I think one of my issues with the film is that he is so enamored of his scripts and his words at this point in his career that there's nobody restraining that. There's no other physics going on other than watching these people talk to each other. And for something as claustrophobic, set over 2 hours with 8 to 10 characters in this one room set, I never felt any tension in the film. There's extreme violence, as is often the case in Tarantino films, enormous racial animus. He gets to use the N-word repeatedly, one of his favorite tropes. But the whole thing, after 20 years of making films, this is the eighth film, I just kept feeling like I've seen these kinds of grandstanding scenes before. Every line of dialogue is so referential, oftentimes to strange things like John Carpenter's The Thing, another film set in a blizzard with a bunch of guys holed up. But I just felt it extremely indulgent.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think I appreciate that when you think of the plot of this movie, it basically becomes a mystery, a very simple one compared to the other films. It's a very sort of stripped-down plot.
Yep.
But I think in that process, he sort of decided just to bloat it up with this sort of self-consciously cool dialogue. And
3 hours of bloated dialogue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's enjoyable to like hear the cadence of the dialogue and all that stuff. But I don't know. You're not sitting in a theater for 3 hours to just listen to good actors talk cool dialogue. You know, you want a little more from the movie, and he doesn't really give it to us this time.
That indulgence, I think, veers into the perverse often in this film. You know, so many of his films, well, really all of his films, have moments of extreme violence, eruptive violence, language that is provocative, offensive. People who like Tarantino understand a lot of the filmic references he's coming from, but at the heart of this film and a lot of his films is this tension between his love of classic cinema, classic storytelling, and his love of bad art, particularly low-grade movies, cult films, grindhouse films, and he's still trying to resolve that. And this film tips so far over, despite the lavish natural settings and this amazing set that they created, but all of the big name stars that are in the film, the budget, the shooting in 70 millimeter, to effectively make a B movie. And mm-hmm. and I'm wondering at what point, you know, should he either completely commit to telling a story classically or go and make low-grade, low-budget films?
I think he'd be best served by doing a low-budget film. I think he sort of needs to go back to basics, I think. I've noticed ever since Kill Bill, his mm-hmm. movies have sort of gone more extravagant, more yes. more violent, and I'm not exactly sure why that was the tipping point for him.
Well, I think part of it for me is that his work with the Weinsteins, particularly, he has more and more rope to work with,
yeah.
and he's building his gallows high. There's really nobody restraining him at this point, and that's a shame because I think he could be an extraordinary filmmaker. But I think at this point in his career, you know. People as distinctive as Tarantino, I think, get a decade to really make their mark. And he made that mark. He was influential. He was new. He was fresh, even though he was extremely offensive in his filmmaking in his early days and still. But he's not moved on. He has not evolved as a filmmaker. And one of the perversities of this, I thought, was the hype over the use of 70mm film and then to use that amazing format for 2.5 hours to shoot a one-room set. Yeah. It often comes across as a stage play.
It just locks you in there. But you know what, though? It's sort of nice because I think that camera catches a lot of detail.
It's a beautiful set, but not worth 2.5 hours. And I would recommend people, unless they are just extreme diehard Tarantino fans and completists and want to check this off their list, that people go and watch some of his much better sourced material and inspiration, like John Carpenter's The Thing, actual westerns of Anthony Mann or Bud Bedeker from the 50s that are told in 70 to 90 minutes, half the time,
yeah.
and more riveting than this film.
Stagecoach would be a good one, too.
Stagecoach. This is really a combination, I guess, of Reservoir Dogs, Stagecoach, and The Thing. If you want to mash those three films together.
Yeah. But, you know, just to sort of single out one person on the cast, I think Jennifer Jason Leigh turns in a really good performance. I think she's the only one who's having
really
fun.
The sole female.
Yeah, the sole female. And gosh, she gets beaten in every which way. And I don't know. I think there's going to be charges of misogyny against him, but
as always with his films. And she takes a beating, and it is shocking in this film.
Yeah.
I can't recommend this film to anybody, really. So to wrap up, you got something to recommend maybe on the small screen?
Well, yeah. Currently, to prepare for the reboot of the season, I'm binge-watching Twin Peaks.
Ah.
Which is
David Lynch.
Oh yeah, which is always a great series to revisit. What about you?
Netflix, I think, has really been tearing up the original productions. They've begun wading into feature film territory, and I highly recommend the film Beasts of No Nation. I really think it's one of the top five films of the year. Highly recommend it, though. Heartbreaking and ultimately hopeful, but it's about African child soldiers and just extraordinary to watch. Kyle, thanks for coming in the last weekend of 2015. I hope you have a happy new year. Lots of good movies in your future, I hope.
I hope so, too. Thanks for having me back.
I've been discussing the new films Joy and The Hateful Eight with frequent contributor Kyle Alvarado. Joy stars Jennifer Lawrence as a struggling single mother who invents a new floor cleaning tool, the Miracle Mop. And Joy is rated PG-13 and co-stars Robert De Niro, Isabella Rossellini, and Bradley Cooper. Quentin Tarantino's snowbound western, The Hateful Eight, is playing select cities now, but will open in El Paso this coming week and stars Kurt Russell, Samuel L. Jackson, and Jennifer Jason Leigh. The film is rated R for extreme language and violence. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak, wishing you a happy new year, and thanks for listening to On Film.